Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Oley Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Oley Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
Oh, here we are again, and it is not 3 a.m. How are you doing, Erica?
I'm doing pretty good, but everything seems a little crazy right now.
Absolutely. This weekend has been jam-packed in the late-night sessions at the House legislature as representatives have been working through the night to debate and pass some of these bills. It's been a little interesting, unnerving, a little bizarre that it's almost done outside of the public business hours, if you will.
Yeah, you know, and I was kind of curious because it doesn't appear that the Senate is doing the same thing. So why is just the House working so late into the night?
Maybe they've got so many bills on that run list that Peter Abarno talked about that they feel they have to cram it into late night sessions just to get through. And it does make the process longer when Republicans have so many amendments that they stick on to these bills where each amendment needs to be debated. I watched a couple sessions. I know you did. It's pretty frustrating when you see amendment after amendment get discussed and then it just gets struck down by the majority vote.
Yes, I absolutely agree. It is frustrating and it's a little hard to watch.
I watched, let's see, what was it? It was 11:13. I watched that passed last night, and we're going to be doing a featurette on that in this particular episode. That's the one involving misdemeanor crimes and creating a diversionary process. And it was interesting to see there were several amendments by the Republicans that were actually adopted. And that it's interesting to look at the different dynamics with some of these bills and what's at the heart. And it seems that there's a little bit more cooperation and what's pliability between the parties on this particular bill.
That is interesting because it seems like in some others, it's complete opposite. So it's good to see that they're trying to work a little bit and, you know, have a little leeway there, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess if you're going to be a representative, you have to have a short memory. Like you might have an amendment that's absolutely bitch slapped down on one bill. And then the next bill you're talking about the gentle lady from the 47th and getting along greatly.
Yeah, you can't hold a grudge, that's for sure.
Yeah. So right now, let's give a quick update for the folks. Two of our bills that we've been tracking for a long time now, it seems like it. It seems like I'm aging quite a bit in this process. But HB 1018, that's the FSEC fusion energy classification within facility site certification regarding fusion energy. That passed the House on February 6th. Currently, it's in the Senate Committee on Environment, Energy, and Technology. It has a hearing date of March 14th at 10:30 a.m. And another one of our bills, SB 5000, the Evergreen State nickname, that passed the Senate on February 5th. It's currently in the House Committee on State Government and Tribal Relations, and it also has a hearing on March 14th at 8 a.m. So I just wanted to, we haven't been ignoring some of the bills we've been tracking. We've just been waiting for a little bit of action. And it looks like those two bills are going to get some action in the opposite House of Origin. And a quick reminder, this week is the House of Origin cutoff, Wednesday, March 12th.
So what does that mean exactly, Jay? Does that mean that if it's not voted on in the House of Origin by that date, that the bill is dead?
Yes, I believe it's another cutoff date. So we've had all these, we had a committee, policy committee cutoff date, we had a fiscal cutoff date, and now we're going to have a House of Origin cutoff date, to where in the last episode, Peter Abarno talked about that run list. And that's all the bills that passed out of committee that got taken to the Rules Committee on second reading, and then third reading, I think, means it actually goes to the floor for debate. Basically, it's in the hands of the Speaker of the House on the House side and the President on the Senate side, to if they want to be heard on the floor. And as we know, we're in a situation where the majority party rules. So I would think they wouldn't bring a bill to the floor that they don't intend on passing. And so if a bill has not passed by Wednesday, March 12th, I would assume midnight, then it is done. That bill is dead.
Well, I have a feeling we're going to see some more late night sessions from the House here in these next few days then.
Yeah, because there's still quite, I mean, I think there's 70 plus bills on the House side on their quote unquote run list. I know two bills that we're keen to pay attention to that have passed through committee and they're sitting there in the Speaker's arms is HB 1133. That's concerning sexually violent predators. That's on the run list. We've covered that in previous shows. And HB 1132, that's that gun bill, the bulk firearm purchase bill, where we actually, Ole Insider, uncovered misinformation at the heart of that bill. Those two are still on the run list that we're waiting to see if they come to the floor.
So I wonder what happens, after the deadline here for the bills that are still on the run list. Do they carry over till the next session? That might be a question we have to ask someone to get an answer to.
I don't think so. I think they're dead for this session. And if they want to get resurrected, like for example, that bill 1132, the bulk firearms purchase, that was brought up last legislative session. I learned that it was brought up, introduced by Farivar last legislative session. So
you're
this
right.
Is the second attempt. I don't think that they stay. I think that it would be incumbent upon the representative or senator to get them sponsored and run them again in the next session.
Gotcha.
Well, I tell you what, let's get into this episode. We're going to talk about two particular bills that passed recently on the floor that we covered. You're going to give us a report on, let's see, what is that? That is SB
5123.
And then I'm going to come up after and I'm going to talk about HB 1113. So let's get into it.
All right. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. So as you know, we did cover SB 5123 back in episode 4. But for those of you who may have missed it or don't remember, this is an act, it says, relating to expanding protections for certain students to promote inclusivity in public schools. Their plan to accomplish this is to add ethnicity, gender expression, gender identity, homelessness, immigration or citizenship status, and neurodivergence onto the list of protected classes for students. In case you missed it, back on January 20th, President Trump issued an executive order which pretty much declared that there are only two genders. Despite this, Washington is trying to protect this gender identity and gender ideology into our public school system. Senator Leonard Christian had something to say about that, so let's take a quick listen to what he says.
Further remarks, Senator Christian.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have this cute as a button dog. He's pretty small, and his name's Rocky. And we'll go out for a walk, and he'll go up to a big dog and start barking. Then as soon as the big dog starts to look at him, he runs between my legs and stands there and waits for me to take care of him. Mr. President, this bill is trying to pick a fight with the federal government, allowing our school districts to have to be the ones who pay for the price. We're literally putting a bill together that spits in the eye of the federal government, daring them to take away the funding of our schools. This is a bad bill. And I don't think that we should be passing this on, this fight on to our school districts. Please vote no.
He had a strange way of getting there, but I do agree with his point. It does feel a little bit like we are challenging the federal government, and it does appear that it would fall back on the schools who would potentially lose federal funding from pushing these kind of things. But aside from all that, we already have protections for students. We already have non-discrimination laws. We already have rules in place that are supposed to prevent these things and come with consequences in case they do happen. And I really like what Senator Phil Fortunato said. So let's quickly play what he said on the debate floor.
Further remarks, Senator Fortunato.
Thank you, Mr. President. The best way to end discrimination is to stop discriminating. If we take a look at these categories, we are now creating so many categories that what happens when you don't fit into this? Let's just flip this around, Mr. President. If we pass this bill, are you now able to discriminate against a white male boy who wears a t-shirt to school that says there's only two genders? Are we now allowed to discriminate against him because he's not on this list? Discrimination is bad. It has no place in our schools, has no place in our state, Mr. President. Doesn't matter whether you're homeless, this or that, or whatever, where you live, what your ethnicity is. Fairness and equality is what it is all about in our education system. Our children deserve fairness and equality. That's what we need to be focusing on, not dividing them into so. What are we going to do next year? Next year, we're going to add four or five new categories? That you're then not going to be able to discriminate based on your height or the color of your eyes? How many times are we going to keep doing this, Mr. President? Discrimination has no place in our education system, in our state government, in our state society. And the best way to stop discrimination is to stop discriminating. This bill doesn't do anything. It's just a bunch of words on paper. And who's going to do this discrimination? Other children? Are we then going to prosecute other children because they get on some kid's case because he's homeless or whatever? No. Those children should be pulled aside, and they should be saying, that is not acceptable behavior in our school system. It is not acceptable for you to be bullying or beating up on somebody, whatever the reason. It doesn't matter. So how many more categories are we going to add? This doesn't do anything to end discrimination. It just creates a new situation where people are then going to be categorized. So I'm making a very strong no on this. Thank you, Mr. President.
Despite all of these great points, the bill went for a vote and it passed. There were 30 yeas, 19 nays, 0 absent, and 0 excused. So it was right down party lines. So I guess this one will move on to the House next, and we'll see what they do with it there. So that is my very short and very simple update on SB 5123. Jay, are you ready to tell us about HB 1113?
You bet. All right, one of the bills we've been tracking, HB 1113, this is regarding misdemeanor charges and creating a new diversionary pathway. If you want to go back and review when it was in committee, episode 006, Dismissal Directive of the Ole Insider podcast is where we covered it. But just to give you a recap, let's hear from the Office of Program Research again in their summary of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this is Corey Patton, staff to the committee. House Bill 1113 relates to the pretrial disposition of certain misdemeanor and gross misdemeanor offenses. For background, under certain circumstances, the prosecuting authority reviewing a case for possible criminal charges against a person may use its discretion to offer a diversion opportunity before filing charges. Generally, pre-filing diversions involve an agreement by the prosecutor to decline to file pending charges if the person complies with certain conditions. Those conditions may include things like completing a treatment program or remaining crime-free for a specified period of time. These types of pre-filing diversions are typically operated directly by the prosecuting authority. Once charges have been filed in a case, there may be other opportunities for the defendant to resolve the case prior to trial, depending on the nature of the charges. For example, a defendant who's charged with a misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor in district or municipal court may petition the court for a deferred prosecution subject to certain eligibility criteria and compliance with specific treatment plans and other conditions. Alternatively, a defendant may enter into a dispositional continuance, such as a stipulated order of continuance, with the agreement of the prosecutor and the approval of the court. A dispositional continuance typically requires the court to the defendant to comply with agreed conditions in exchange for the dismissal of charges. The bill before you, House Bill 1113, establishes an alternative pathway to resolving certain offenses pre-trial. The bill authorizes the court, upon motion of either party, to agree to dismiss a misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor charge upon the defendant's substantial compliance with court-ordered terms, conditions, or programs. Certain specific offenses and categories of offenses are ineligible to be dismissed under the bill. For the full list of excluded offenses, please refer to pages 2 and 3 of the written bill analysis. If the defendant agrees to waive their speedy right to trial, the court may continue the defendant's case for a period not to exceed 12 months and order the defendant to comply with terms, conditions, or programs that are deemed appropriate based on the defendant's specific situation. Full restitution must be a required condition in all cases. If the defendant substantially complies with the court-ordered terms and conditions, the court must dismiss the pending charges. However, if it appears that the defendant is not substantially complying with the court-ordered terms and conditions, the court must hold a hearing to determine whether such noncompliance is willful.
All right, so that's the summary of HB 1113. It was heard on the House floor this past weekend. I think it might have been on one of those late-night sessions. That was brought to the legislature, sponsored by Representative Farivar. And let's listen to her statement on the floor in support of this bill.
The good member from the 46th, Representative Farivar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our criminal legal system is extremely overburdened. We're facing a lawsuit because of our crumbling public defense system. Seattle does not have enough pro tem judges to serve justice, and our prosecutors are oversubscribed. This bill will bring some relief. Right now, judges and prosecutors are dismissing 45% of non-traffic misdemeanors on the back end of the system. 45%. People aren't getting treatment, the behavioral health crisis isn't being addressed, and little accountability is achieved. On top of that, Washington is still struggling to comply with the Trueblood lawsuit. DSHS's own numbers show that there is no plateau in sight for our restoration referrals. Over the last 10 years, we have seen misdemeanor referrals to the competency restoration system increase by 150%. Meanwhile, crime continues. In a countrywide review, we have found that 13 states have created the same pathway through meaningful treatment and accountability. And that is for both misdemeanors and felonies. This bill doesn't go that far. It's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's just right. House Bill 1113 simply asks for the option to consider diversion. It's very tailored, it's narrow, it creates meaningful systems of accountability, and it helps us stop the cycle of harm. Mr. Speaker, join me in pushing individuals to address their issues head on, rather than waiting for them to serve their sentence and go right back in to the same situation and to continue perpetrating harm in our communities. Please vote yes.
And it's important to remember that there are many misdemeanor charges that are not included, that are not eligible in this program. It is tailored and geared towards people that have mental health issues and drug issues. So we're thinking about petty property crime, things like that, where the system, our justice system, is overloaded with these cases. And as she pointed out, 45% are being dismissed right now. So this is trying to create a diversionary program that sets milestones and markers for people to follow to hopefully get some help and address the underlying issues that's causing them to commit these crimes. So we discussed this in episode 6 when we were in when they were in committee, that what came out of that committee was the prosecutor in King County in Seattle had not been in contact with the committee chair, Representative Goodman, or this bill sponsor, Representative Farvar, and they made a specific point that they had been trying to get in contact with the Seattle prosecuting attorney's office for months to get their particular statistics. So that was a very interesting rub that the Seattle prosecuting attorney's office was not working with the legislature on this particular bill. Now, there was pushback from Republicans. Representative Jim Walsh from the 19th Legislative District and chair of the WAGOP statewide had a speech in which he recommended a no vote. Let's hear that.
Are there further remarks? The good member from the 19th, Representative Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm also rising to suggest a no vote on this proposal. Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the efforts of my colleagues to try to do something about that revolving door. And Mr. Speaker, I acknowledge the issues raised by my colleagues that we need to do more for those who are caught in a cycle of self-destructive behavioral health problems. But, Mr. Speaker, as I mentioned briefly in our discussion in one of the amendments, there's the issue of moral hazard. And I believe that is an issue that really is complicating and really rendering really reverse to our goals in public policy, perverse outcomes. Moral hazard is when we insulate an individual or an actor of any sort from the consequences of his or her actions. And then we end up encouraging more of those risk-prone behaviors because we separate actions from consequences. Now, moral hazard applies to many things. It applies to economic activity as well as criminal, even if it's low-level criminal activity that we're discussing here. And I'm afraid that our system, think of it this way, Mr. Speaker. There are carrots and there are sticks. And if we focus too much on carrots and take away the sticks, we get perverse outcomes. Right now, in our state, we have a situation where crime is up and behavioral health issues are getting worse. Because I believe we have separated actions from consequences. We need to connect actions with consequences, Mr. Speaker. We need to not embrace moral hazard. And I'm afraid that one of the reasons we're seeing worsening quality of life standards is because we have embraced moral hazard. I know that my colleagues want to seek good outcomes. But this proposal embraces moral hazard. For that reason, please vote no.
And it was an interesting pushback from Representative Jim Walsh. I think it neglects the fact that 45% supposedly of these low-level misdemeanor cases are just dismissed. So that is already executing what he's discussing. So this diversionary program that's created is trying to address that 45% that's being dismissed. Unfortunately, we had an appointment to speak with Representative Farvar to discuss this particular piece of legislation, and the office never got back to us, failed to schedule a meeting. I contacted her after one of the committee hearings. Very pleasant woman, was willing to discuss, but it seems she's being shielded by her communications staff. So I will reach out once again to seek clarification on this particular bill, because it does seem like a good effort. One of the main questions we have from Ole Insider is, if 45% are already being dismissed, and this is a program they're running through the judicial system, not the prosecuting attorney's office, but it's going to be a program from the judge's side that the judge can impose, the pleadant, the perpetrator, the perp, can request this diversionary program through the judge. What is their incentive to request this program if already these cases are being dismissed? So I don't quite understand the on-ramp here, because it is from the perpetrator's standpoint. They request to be put into this diversionary program, and yet wouldn't they just sit back and say, well, my case will be dismissed anyways. Why would I enter this diversionary program? Because once again, the mentally ill do not think they're mentally ill. They rarely seek treatment for their mental illness they don't acknowledge they have. And the drug addicted are in lives with downward spirals. They are addicted to drugs. They're not likely to voluntarily seek help. That's why we need these programs to on-ramp these people to get the services they need. So I think it's a decent attempt. It's very interesting, but we still have more questions. And we're going to have the opportunity to seek those questions, because as we'll see here, the bill passed. So it's going to go on to the Senate, and possibly I'll reach out to Jim Walsh. I'll try to seek Representative Farvar again, or perhaps a senator, now that it's going to the Senate, to seek clarifications on some of these questions. The other question, the most obvious one, is if the system is overloaded, and let's be clear, we're speaking about major population bases. We are speaking about King County. If the system is already overloaded where they're dismissing 45% of these low-level misdemeanor charges, do we even have programs in place that can help these people? Meaning, is this creating a law for this diversionary program that doesn't exist, and then it's going to become a boondoggle to set this program up? So lots of questions surrounding this bill that I think is a good effort to at least attack a problem that exists in our society.
Are there further remarks? Seeing none, the question before the House is final passage of Engrossed Substance II House Bill 1113. The Speaker is about to start the roll call machine. The Speaker has started the roll call machine. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? The Speaker is about to lock the roll call machine. The Speaker has locked the roll call machine. Clerk will take the record.
Mr. Speaker, there are 50 yeas, 46 nays, 2 excused.
Having received a constitutional majority, Engrossed Substance II House Bill 1113 is declared passed.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.